This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. You've probably heard my guest Hank Azaria. He does the voices of several characters on The Simpsons, including Mo the bartender, Police Chief Wiggum, and Apu, the owner of the Quickie Mart. You've probably seen Azaria, too, in The Birdcage. He played the gay Guatemalan maid. In the telemovie Tuesdays with Maury, he portrayed journalist Mitch Albom. In Friends, he was Phoebe's scientist boyfriend. Hank Azaria now stars in a new series on Showtime called Huff. He plays Dr. Craig Hufstadt, a psychiatrist with plenty of problems of his own. Living with his wife, teenage son, and mother ensures there's no shortage of crises at home, plus he's going through something of a midlife crisis, which is affecting him in the office as well as at home. In this episode, Huff is talking with a patient who is a control freak and obsessive about cleanliness. During the session, you'll hear Huff knock over a cup of coffee, which sets the patient off.
You know, I don't think you understand how serious this is, Neil. The ER doctor who sent you here said you've been keeping yourself from having a bowel movement for almost a month now. I'm guessing Imodium and a hell of a lot of willpower. Now, if you don't start talking to me, you're going to end up right back at the ER, where they're going to put you on a 72-hour suicide watch, which means that legally, they can make you take a crap.
You can't do that.
Well, if you rupture your colon, where do you think you're going to end up?
I can't go back there.
Yeah, sit down.
Clean it up.
Relax.
Clean it up.
Just breathe. Paula. Focus on my finger. Focus on my finger and breathe. You're going to give yourself a panic attack, Neil. Take it easy.
Hank Azaria, welcome to Fresh Air. Now, you play a psychiatrist in Huff, and you've said that you've been in therapy for 15 years yourself, so you know something about the therapy process, and that you even took the script to your therapist. What did he tell you that rang true or false about it?
Well, you know, I wanted to make sure that it just felt believable to him, which he said it did. And he said the only thing he said he was concerned about was having he shared that he once early in his psychiatric career lost three patients to suicide in like 2 months, and that was the worst time of his life. And it was no joke how much it affected him. And he wanted to make sure that the script dealt with that honestly, because the show's really a black comedy, and the tone purposely kind of jumps around, and it was hard to get right, especially at first. And he wanted to make sure we weren't being too frivolous or cheap with it.
It must be weird when you're in therapy now, because the therapist is observing you, but you're observing him probably because you're playing one now.
Yeah, but, you know, I've been with this guy for so long. I've had full transference with him. He's like another father to me. So I've already, you know, studied him up and backwards.
Yeah, so how much does he register interest or engagement when he talks? And have you picked up on that playing Huff? You know, does his face remain neutral, or does he register whether what you're saying seems like interesting and potent and relevant or not?
My shrink, you mean?
Yeah.
He very much... It's sort of both. He's extraordinarily neutral, but you can tell he's absolutely with everything you're saying, which is, I guess, something I tried to put into Huff. You want to remain kind of impassive, and not somebody shares some kind of horrible detail, you don't want to go, whoa! but you do want to let people know that you're sympathetic, and that you, most of all, that you understand and that you are listening. You want to make sure people get that you get it. Which is very similar to good acting, you know. You just want to make sure that your scene partner is getting that you're listening, and that you want to make sure that they're understanding what you're saying.
So are you still doing The Simpsons while you're doing Huff?
Uh-huh. I'm recording The Simpsons. In fact, I'll be recording them tomorrow from here in New York.
How did you get to be on The Simpsons? And two of the voices you do are Mo, the bartender, and Apu, who runs the convenience store, the Quickie Mart.
Yes, that's correct. Mo was the first voice I did. There's little Mo for you there. And Apu was actually the third voice, I believe, that I did.
And I was 22 years old. This was a long time ago. I'm 40 now. I was 22 years old and hadn't worked much. There was an original voice of Mo, the bartender, that I guess they weren't too happy with. Wanted to replace, and I had done one other voiceover at the time for a failed Fox kind of Roger Rabbit type pilot, where I played the voice of this animated dog. And I guess they'd known me from that. So they called me. And it was just kind of like not an open call, but there was a lot of people there. And I went in. There was Matt Groening and a guy named Sam Simon who created the show. And I did this voice. And I was doing the play at the time in L.A. where I was playing a drug dealer. And I was sort of doing a bad Al Pacino impression in the play from Dog Day Afternoon. I was sort of talking like this, like kind of Al kind of sounded in Dog Day Afternoon. And I said, what about that voice? They're like, well, we want Mo to be gravelly. So I just made that voice gravelly, and it sounded like that. And they were just like, listen, that's great. Can you come record that right now? Literally on the spot. And I was like, yeah, sure. And I walked over with them on the Fox lot and recorded it. I had no idea. I hadn't read a script. I just recorded these lines that they needed and left, and frankly thought that was the last I'd hear of it. And they kept calling me back week after week. The next week I did Wiggum.
Chief Wiggum, chief of police, talks like this.
And then I did Apu. And then after about midway through the second season, they made me, they gave me a contract. They made me a regular. By that point, I was doing like 5 or 10 voices.
Did you know you could do voices? I know you did that voice on that animated series that you mentioned. But had you done a lot of work like that before?
No, I hadn't done work like that before. But I'd certainly... My friends refer to me as the freakish mimic.
And I, what does that mean?
It means I can mimic a lot of people's voices almost exactly right away. And it is a little bit freakish. And I've always been able to do it. And since I was a child, you know, to the point where I thought everybody, you know, when you're 5, you think everybody can do it. You don't realize it's a special talent. And it's just fortunate for me that I found, you know, the ultimate great outlet for that particular weird skill, which is like a job like The Simpsons, where I must have done like 50 voices on that show by now in the 16 years we've been doing it.
Do you have a favorite Mo scene?
Favorite Mo scene? There's been a lot. He's one of my favorite characters. You know, one of my favorite times is when Mo is asking a girl out, and he says to her that he's going to go out and buy her a steak the size of a toilet seat. That one sort of stayed with me.
How did you come up with the voice of Apu? And he's an Indian in America who runs the Quickie Mart.
Correct. He really is just an Indian guy. I mean, in Los Angeles, pretty much every 7-Eleven or convenience store worker is either Indian or Pakistani or from this area. And when I first moved to L.A., these were the people I really interacted with mostly because I didn't know anybody. So I would talk to these guys. He's also kind of loosely based on Peter Sellers' character from the film The Party. I don't know if you know that, but Peter Sellers in that movie plays a character named Hrundi V. Bakshi, and he's a very open, sweet, kind, innocent guy. So sort of Apu's personality is kind of based on that character.
You've had to sing as Apu?
I have had to sing as Apu, it's true.
Is it hard to sing in character?
It's much easier for me to sing in character. I'm doing a play right now. I'm doing a musical version of Monty Python's Holy Grail that's going to be on Broadway in February. It's much more difficult for me to sing in my own voice. It's much easier for me to sing as Wiggum or as Apu or even as Mo.
Why is that?
I think I'm just more comfortable with you know, the mask, you know, the vocal mask.
You know, Chief Wiggum's like this. It's sort of easier to sing like this
than it is to sing. I'm not embarrassed to do that, but I'd be embarrassed to do the same thing in my own singing voice. It's weird.
Is it any easier to do voices when you're doing it just as the soundtrack for animation? Is it harder to do it when your body's there and your body doesn't necessarily fit the voice?
No, yes and no, I guess. I find that, you know, because I'm so vocally oriented that whenever I have to do a role in a movie or on TV that does have a very thick accent or some strange vocal quality, the body tends to follow naturally from the voice you get. You know, when I did The Birdcage and I played a guy, a Guatemalan gay guy who talked like this, your body tends to follow the way that voice is. It's hard to, like, carry yourself in a very macho way when you're speaking like that.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, you played the Guatemalan housemaid in The Birdcage. And who did you base the character on?
That was, I just, on the one hand, just tried to get a Guatemalan accent as authentically as I could, and then sort of find a way to be as feminine as I could. And I sort of had it narrowed down to two voices, one that was a little tougher than that. And then I sort of presented the voice to a friend of mine who is actually a very beautiful drag queen in L.A., and he sort of selected the more fruity voice. He said, you know, I wanted to make sure it was authentic. I wanted to make sure it wasn't too over the top. And he said that I should go with that one. And then I realized, though, after about 2-3 weeks of working on it, that it really kind of sounded exactly like my grandmother. Which sort of, it really did. My grandmother's this, she's passed away, but I'm Sephardic Jewish, which is Spanish Jews. And she had this, she spoke this Spanish dialect, you know. And she was very sweet and loving and talked kind of like this. And it sort of realizing that it sounded like her also gave me a good piece of the character because she was so maternal and mothering and loving that it was very, if I sort of had her mentality, it was easy to be kind of feminine, thinking that I was just kind of my grandma.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Hank Azaria. He does several voices in The Simpsons, including Mo, the bartender, and Apu, the owner of who runs the Quickie Mart. And now he's starring in his own Showtime series, which is called Huff, and he plays a psychiatrist with problems of his own. Can you tell us something about your childhood, where you grew up, what your parents did for a living when you were young?
I grew up in Forest Hills, New York, in Queens. Mm-hmm. My father is retired now, but he worked in the garment center. He had a couple of, at different times, he had different dress manufacturing businesses. And my mother was a housewife, and raised three kids, me and two sisters. I have two older sisters. My mother really, they both loved show business, my parents, even though they weren't in it. They're tremendous aficionados of theater and opera and film and TV. They love everything. And they exposed me to a lot growing up, which I guess gave me some of the bug to do it. My mother actually was a publicist at Columbia Pictures in New York for a couple of years before she married my father. She's bilingual. She speaks Spanish. So she worked for their Latin country foreign distribution. She worked for publicity with South America and all the Spanish-speaking countries. And she loved it. And, you know, so I grew up really, we were always very, very aware of favorite actors and favorite movies and TV shows. And to this day, they see every film that comes out. They live in Miami now, you know, but they must see 3-4 films a week. And they know every television show.
So what was your first real break acting?
You know, I've had so many little breaks. I've had such a gradual career. I've skipped no steps. I mean,
how about commercials? Did you skip that step?
No, not at all. My first job was a commercial when I was 17 years old. The first audition I ever went on, I got. It was a commercial for like Italian television. Once I got The Simpsons fairly steadily, I stopped going out on commercial auditions, which seemed crazy at the time because they needed the money, but I was making just enough from The Simpsons to live, and I found it so demoralizing. I just couldn't deal with it anymore. I used to always sound sarcastic when I read commercial copy. I'd be like, listen, this product's really great. And they'd be like, can you say that again? You sounded sarcastic. I was like, yeah, I can't seem to help it.
Right.
I remember one day they were doing some ad campaign for Jell-O where they had this computer-generated animated character called Jell-O Man that was some gelatin O that lived in your refrigerator.
Uh-huh.
And they were looking for the voice of Jell-O Man. And I, you know, I'm reading this thing. I'm like, well, he seems like a vagrant. I mean, he's living in your refrigerator. So I did some kind of voice like this or something. Like, hey, I'm Jell-O Man. I'm here in your fridge. And this woman, I did, you know, the take. And this woman went, you know, we do want Jell-O Man to have a bit of an edge. But the children should also like him. He's likable. He's likable. He's relatable. So, you know, do it again. And, you know, Jell-O Man's nice. He's a nice guy. You want him there. And I was listening to this direction, and I realized this was going to be the last moment of my commercial voiceover career. I really did. I realized I can't take it anymore. And I just said to this woman, you know that Jell-O Man's not real, don't you? And I left. And that was it for me.
Oh. I want to tell you something about my reaction to you on screen. And tell me if this is unusual or typical. There's certain actors you see on screen and you think, well, they look like an actor. You know, they just look like an actor. And then there's other actors you see on screen and you feel like, wow, this person, they look like a real person when they're in that role. I recognize them. And that's how I've always felt about you and whatever role I see you in. I always feel like, oh, that strikes me as a real person. I might even know that person.
Hmm.
Do other people say that to you?
No, that's a very nice compliment. I think that very much comes out. I think a lot of the actors you study with, Roy London, this guy I'm talking about, that's what we were really hammered in to do. Gary Shandling studied with him, and Brad Pitt, and Gina Davis. He really... he forced us to not act, to really just put ourselves in the situation and just do it as believably as possible and as realistically as possible and just trust that whatever our honest reaction is will be the most interesting thing. That took me years to trust that was the case. I think I really took it to heart, especially because I find doing characters and voices really easy, but I didn't know the first thing about acting, really, but standing up in front of people and just kind of being emotionally honest was abhorrent and terrifying to me.
What was so bad about it?
You know, I was one of those people that thought that acting meant you could, you know, not be yourself. You could hide behind a character, and that's true to an extent, but, you know, good acting really is the ultimate bearing of yourself. You know, on an emotional level, it's being very, very honest and open and truthful in front of, you know, potentially millions of people. And I'm a shy, private person and didn't like that at all. And Roy spent years with many people saying, you know, you're still BSing us. That's not the real you. How would you really react to that? What are you afraid of? Partly why I went into therapy. Because Roy used to recommend my shrink to people when he would hit blocks that people couldn't just unravel in class. He'd say, look, you have such a profound problem expressing your anger in public that you need to unlock that for yourself before you can do it in front of other people. Like, you have a genuine block with it.
So was that helpful, going to therapy?
Tremendously.
Yeah?
Yeah. Absolutely. For me to... I first went into therapy because I was having a different kind of problem. I had been getting pretty good in class, but I would be very proficient and open and relaxed in class, but I'd go into an audition situation and I would freeze up like you wouldn't believe, like really badly. I'd have like almost anxiety attacks, and I had to calm down. And I never had that. All of a sudden, it just started getting me. I think maybe because I was starting to get a little better and realizing that I was actually genuinely displaying who I was.
Mm-hmm.
I found that, you know, outside of the safe environment of class, I found that very, very scary.
No, you know, for people who get people who have problems with anxiety or have more serious anxiety attacks and who are also in a position where they have to perform, I think there's the question of, well, you know, do you just like try to breathe deeply? Do you try to psychologically overcome the anxiety, or do you take a pill that can help you deal with it? And if you take a pill, will that affect your performance in another way? Did you ever face that particular question?
Yeah, I'm not a big believer in pills, especially for a performer, because they sort of affect your instrument, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Two things I found tremendously helpful with anxiety. Breathing is really important. Just remembering to breathe is tremendously important. Just the simple act of concentrating on inhale, exhale can get you through a lot. Also, the genius teacher Roy London, who I mentioned before, what he taught us all about this specific thing, because that's one of the first thing actors bring, is like, but I'm so nervous. This character's supposed to be confident. How can I possibly play it if I'm genuinely that nervous? And this was his genius. He would give this note in so many different ways. He said, look, most confident people are a wreck underneath. You know, what do you think that veneer's all about? They're overcompensating. He said, you're going to play this extraordinarily confident person if what you're feeling is tremendously nervous, as somebody who inside is freaking out. Don't try to pretend you're not that. Say, no, my guy, the way I play this guy is absolutely extraordinarily insecure. And I'm not going to let the person who I'm in the scene with, not necessarily the audience, but the person who I'm trying to impress in the scene know that I'm that nervous. So I'm going to do what I need to do to compensate for that.
This is really fascinating, but I'm wondering, like, when you're doing Mo the Bartender, is any of this psychological insight useful, or is that you're just like doing a voice and a funny character?
No, 100%. I mean, in fact, I was always able to make this sound, right, as Mo, but I think I only really, and this was a few years into doing The Simpsons, I only really started to act these characters well when I sort of understood this. I absolutely try to bring this to all The Simpsons characters. I put myself, how would I react in this circumstance, honestly, and I imagine that and go forward. But I just make it come out in this voice, but it's still my, you know, how I feel I would relay all this.
Hank Azaria, thank you so much. It's been great to talk with you.
Thank you very much.
Hank Azaria stars in the new Showtime series Huff. This winter, he opens on Broadway in a Monty Python musical called Spam-a-Lot.